Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. It's technically Evelyn's Corner.
Yes, so, welcome.
Yes. Welcome. Welcome to the Evelyn Corner. I've actually not got the... There we go, I'll get the thumbnail back up. Sorry, we're cheating there, letting you preview our actual show before it's gone. Pretty good. Now we've got a corker for you today, I think, to use some British parlance. It's one I've been wanting to do for a little while, and I know it's something you know quite a lot about as well, Evelyn.
Yeah, it's not something I've read into too much recently, but especially as you're in a period when I was reading a lot of sort of Austrian literature on empiricism and methodology, you very very quickly bump into this notion that, you know, not even necessarily is the methodology in finding out a certain subset of information flawed, but then the whole corpus of a kind of realm of study can also sort of come across the same issue.
Yes, it can. To do the normal YouTube stuff, which we'll probably do also near the end, if you want to donate, the best way is still via Streamlabs. That will take the least cut from us. We are still monetized on YouTube, as you can probably notice. So you can send super chats, you can become a member, or you can send super stickers, whatever other stupid stuff that YouTube wants you to do. That frankly, nobody ever really does.
But... yes, please bump up our score in the social credit algorithm by doing the required rituals,
yes,
of posting.
The rituals must begin. We're kind of doing our preamble here anyway, so is there anything you need to report to people before we start?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
I was going to remind people that we will be on Millennial this year at some point.
Oh, but we will, yes. We should hopefully get a date and time for that at some point soon. I did post that in the Telegram, and then you had your debut on Unpopular Opinions last week.
I had my debut on Unpopular Opinions. You can get that over on Academic Agents channel. We basically went over some of the kayfabe stuff, which I want to mention here. It doesn't bear mentioning. And then we went over the online safety bill, formerly the online arms framework. So we're kind of double covering there, but it was more because Le Boomer himself had not covered that subject yet and needed a bit of a guide to it, and we did quite an in-depth one.
Yeah.
Also, those of you who commented, and it's good that people are still monitoring our comms and areas. The Nomos website's back up, and
yes,
I think almost completely functional. I need to upload a couple more articles. I need to actually upload our written recap of Nomos London, and then I need to reformat some of the stuff in the Birmingham one. Those are the two that are missing, I believe. But apart from that, the Nomos website is back up and running.
I think there's a couple other things as well. You will be on, I'm allowed to mention it.
Yes.
Jay Burden's show on Wednesday.
I don't know if it'll be out on Wednesday. We're recording it on Wednesday.
Right.
So it's recorded and then it's put out later.
Cool.
But I will be on,
I will also say as well, in regards to the website, that I find it so typical that, obviously because Woz was there and was speaking.
Yeah.
And he uploaded his speech, and a lot of people seem to have rather enjoyed it, especially this sort of positive, kind of uplifting vision that he's offered to folk through that of the England of 2100. That this then gets shared across Telegram and, you know, all over. But it's, you know, Dave Cullen shared it, and it's got thousands and thousands of views, and the bloody website's down.
I don't know. I sometimes think with bumps in visibility, it's probably better at being down sometimes.
No, that might be true. I see Radlib and loads of other people in the chat though. So hello friends.
Hello, it's good to see you. And I will also remind people to interact with the videos if you want to see them.
Yeah,
for the VOD as well. Do drop likes. Do drop comments.
Go to the Telegram. Go to the Substack.
Yeah, it's all linked below.
Watch the other things. I'm sure everyone knows by now. I think as well, because we've got a sort of singular topic this evening, we might try and get through this at a reasonable pace as well. And even though this might seem slightly out of time, this is something we can always hark back on when we either discuss certain sort of empirical studies and realms of, shall we say, social science.
Well, it's a I want to do this as kind of a frameworking thing as well, because it's something that I fall foul of, it's something that a lot of people fall foul of. that competing in a very specific narrow way, you know, doing the I've got all these trying to shoot down the people's sources and try and get people to what's that? Sorry, it's already been coming.
Ah.
Ed, sorry. Yeah, trying to
Whoops.
do stuff already done. Trying to get people to compete on like the individual study level is not particularly productive,
Yes.
and it's very much there needs to be a meta undermining really of what has become the science. And I know there's some people who get very upset when I talk about this because they're very wedded. Oh, you can't undermine the scientific method, you can't undermine empiricism, but that's not really what we're trying to do. I think
Yes.
there's that again, there's that knee jerk, and it's the knee jerk that we used to get maybe a year ago when people would talk more about belief and religion and you know, the idea of some degree of zealotry. And that's kind of, as I've been writing, I know we mentioned the Substack, that Holy Mountain piece that I wrote, that's actually kind of evaporated in that it came out and was a lot less controversial than I thought it was going to be, because it's, I feel like the landscape's caught up with it. But this I feel will be a wave
See,
in the coming year.
this is the problem we have is not that our takes are ever wrong, they're always just too early.
Yeah, I see stuff pop up that we've done like 3, 4 months down the line. I'm like,
Somebody elsewhere is making a killing talking about it
I'll
somewhere
repost it
else, and it's
again.
like,
I'll tell people about it again. I don't know. Not to sound like content hipsters, which we, let's be fair, we've kind of become.
oh no, we are. We might as well fully embrace it,
This
really.
is an evergreen topic though. This is something we could have talked about a year ago. This is something we could talk about a year from now. Because a lot of the stuff we'll see, some of it is from this year. The inciting incident, as you'll
Yes.
see, was from this year that jogged it back in my head. But the rest of it is kind of an evergreen
Well, I
topic.
think as well, there is enough of the aftermath of people who have been sort of awoken to the fact that just because, you know, they talk about the experts and the truth and the science, these aren't really terms that mean what we would think they mean in the sense of the marketplace of ideas, and because you've got a peer-reviewed study, that means the conclusion and the data sets are, it's all impenetrable. But this is actually not true,
No.
and that it also sort of gives them a perfect, like, you know, they could always post the replication crisis to you to show why your study's fake, and then suggest why their study is
Is
always
re yeah,
perfect,
is the
and that. Watching people go through all that kind of stuff, I can remember like early 2020, everyone on Twitter is like, oh, well, we've got this graph about COVID, and we've got this graph of masks, and we've got this one on social distancing at 1 meter, and this one on social distancing at 2 meters, and all this stuff. And then you realize that actually a lot of it was probably pointless because the vast majority of those studies might have been completely unrepeatable.
Well, the thing is, we can talk about the stuff without malice first.
Yes.
But I would like to start our framing device, really, which is this what this will be, since we've kind of done our nearly 10-minute ramble, which is to let people filter in
Yep.
a little bit of behind the scenes stuff here. That's why I leave the thumbnail up. But this is really what got me thinking about the replication crisis again, because we have Erik Sorensen, who we'll go over who he is in a sec. But this paragraph really it really ground my gears. To quote, "If you disagree with scientists about science, it's not really a disagreement. You're actually just incorrect. Science is not truth. It's the process of finding the truth. When science evolves, it didn't lie to you. It learned more."
Yo, dog, we heard you like sophistry, so
Yeah.
we put some sophistry on your sophistry so
Yeah,
you
you can gaslight while you
can
gaslight, yeah.
gaslight. Yeah.
Which is apparently word of the year 2022.
Gaslight.
Apparently, no, that's the Merriam-Webster word of the year. Can you guess what the Oxford Dictionary word of the year is?
Lizzo.
It's not. It's goblin mode, and I'm not joking.
No.
Ox like the Oxford Dictionary word of the year is goblin mode. Yeah, press G to get rid of the goblins.
See, the much like Radlib stated the other day about the whole Sam Bankman-Fried episode, the only real punishment was the people who learned what polycule was. Now the only real punishment for that is that I now have to consider what goblin mode might be.
I could make some anime.
Yeah, please use goblin mode in a sentence.
Please use goblin. No, I will not. But this Eric Sorensen character, he is a congressman-elect from Illinois' 17th district. First, he's a meteorologist. He's not even he's a weatherman. He's not a scientist. In Congress, nearly 50 years, and Illinois' first elected LGBTQ representative ever. He/him. And he's got a nice little windmill, little green science thing here. But this isn't actually his quote. He stole this.
God forbid! I thought this was an original piece of his. This was poetry of the highest order. Such insight, such wisdom.
Here we have Muhammad Safa.
And let me guess, he stole it originally from the I Ching.
No, this appears to be his formulation, but it's definitely a sentiment that's expressed very often.
It's one of the comments. Wouldn't you like to know, weather boy?
weather boy. But this Muhammad Safa character, he is representative of patriotic vision to the United Nations. His profile picture is him in some UN committee meeting. Can you get more globalist? But he's been recognized.
Sorry, what was the little handle under his I'll never give up making this world better for all of us. By all of us.
Oh, these people.
God, the democratization's just dripping off him.
But he's Lebanese, apparently, and he's been recognized by the Young Champions of the Earth. Because he's shockingly, just like the gay congressman back there, he's somebody who's invested in the green agenda, which we'll come to later. It's all about sustainability. But remember, if you question the science, you're not only wrong, you're wrong.
you're not just wrong, you're evil. Ever question the experts because you have some form of motive to do so.
But we'll kind of get through these at pace, but just giving you the framing here. And another one that I found as well, this is like the second thing that comes up when you Google black science guy, and it's the awful like low res, and I'm zoomed in here.
It looks deep fried almost.
Yeah, I thought this was a joke at first because it's got like the I love science thing on the bottom of it as well. This is obviously from a Reddit. They've clipped it badly, but this is from the Greenpeace official account in 2015 saying, astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson takes on climate change.
Join the movement.
Yeah. The dinosaurs never saw that asteroid coming. What's our excuse? Yeah, what's an astrophysicist know about climate science? Stay in your fields.
I would say that actually that's not the worst thing to study when it comes to climate change, but he's no Willie Soon. Like,
he's not going
to
talk about the sunspots.
No,
he?
He's not.
But
they don't want to talk about sunspot. big up all the Willie Soon appreciators.
Oh dear me! But this is obviously very indicative of magical thinking in many ways. It's indicative of a very very well worn idea that scientism has become the de facto religion of the cathedral.
Oh yeah, they've blown up science as a category of knowledge in the hopes that it fills the God-shaped hole.
Yes, that really is it's a matter of belief, is what it is. And I want to kind of frame this for people who might be coming here, because there are people, like, I need to remember that this is some people's first stream with us. And some people are like, oh, sometimes your intros are patronized. I'm not sure I patronize people, but like,
this is just how we are.
Yeah. We need to cover it properly. We can't just assume too much. But I don't know. It's good framing anyway. And it's so, I don't know, the Neil deGrasse Tyson stuff is so fucking embarrassing. The Black Science Guy stuff is just, it's so terrible. It makes me so just itchy. But the quote that you have here is pretty good. Just to sum up the belief we're dealing with.
Reading through Man in Technics earlier on today, which has some unbelievable stuff in it, like nuclear-grade takes.
Yes, this is Spengler, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. Within the growth of the towns, Technics became bourgeois. The successor of those Gothic monks was the cultured lay inventor, the expert priest of the machine. Finally, with the coming of rationalism, the belief in technics almost becomes a materialistic religion. Technics is eternal and immortal like God the Father. It delivers mankind like God the Son, and it illuminates us like God the Holy Ghost. And its worshipper is the progress Philistine of the modern age, which runs from Lamertry to Lenin.
this is basically him coming out with a big stick long before it existed, and like trying to get like this is Spengler going gas the Redditors.
I don't think it's so much that he's not. There is parts of kind of moral judgment about it in regards to decline and this, that, and the next thing that surround this kind of statement, but it's just the notion he's like, no, this is just like, this is how it is now. And once you fully take on this understanding of technique and the worship of technique is coming from, you know, our original foundation with religion and ritual and ceremony and prayer and stuff like that, that it all becomes very, you can't almost describe it in words, but it's like you read this, you think about the religiosity in science, and then you remember the fact they have the statue of Kali at CERN and they do weird rituals there where they wear druid.
It was a joke,
but you know, they are working on a machine that is planning to discover both the beginning and end of all things, and they have decided to festoon it with a statue of a deity that is both the ending and the becoming and, you know, destruction and creation of all things all at one time.
Everyone's saying it's very slightly 40K. Telly G just decided to put a comment saying Big Bang Theory is the minstrel show about autism, which is just a funny comment on its own. But we do have, before we get into the actual subject properly, a quick $2 donation here from Aurelius Nautius Caesar, a long-time supporter of the channel, saying, I love the United Nations. I can never read that properly.
Zezintek?
That might be a 40k thing again. Oh no, everyone's a 40k fag. Oh no. Oh no, miniatures everywhere. But,
we only have to paint 5 more miniatures and we'll save the West.
Painting miniatures to save the West. We're going to do something we don't usually do, which is start with the Wikipedia crisis and the replication crisis.
The Wikipedia
article on the replication crisis, because actually it's a decent summary in many places. It's very well sourced, and it has a half-decent chronology to it. I was quite surprised when I went on it to double-check a couple of things and make sure I'd not forgotten part of the overview, that it's a pretty good. We're not going to be using it exclusively, obviously. We have the actual sources that are mentioned in it. But for those of you who want to do some half-decent reading, I've stumbled upon a couple of decent Wikipedia articles recently. The destruction of the country houses Wikipedia article is pretty good.
Yeah, which is a resource we will get through to using at some point.
It is, yes. Because I bought a whole bunch of books about that too. But the replication crisis Wikipedia article is pretty good, and in both chronology and sourcing. But I want to just go through some of our notes, really.
There was also the bit we wanted to mention at the top of this page, which is like the little subtitle that says this article is about an issue of scientific methodology for the reproducibility crisis in humans, see male infertility crisis.
Yeah, that's, again, the psyops are stacking up. Oh no. To go through kind of a broad bird's eye view of the replication crisis, it's to do with the fact that most studies can't be reproduced.
No.
It's as simple as that, in that if you have somebody else who follows your methodology, the results aren't the same. When the methodology can be followed, we'll find as we go on through this that a lot of studies actually that are put out are not reproducible by design, as in the information put out in the study doesn't give you the tools to reproduce the study itself.
Yes.
Which is a big problem in emerging kind of climate fields. But the replication crisis, it started in psychology, but spread to basically all the soft sciences.
Well, the classic one is like the one they touted for years about, we showed infants of different ethnicities flashing images of adults of their ethnicity alternated with adults of different ethnicities.
Yeah.
And we looked at the size of the pupil and how much it opened or dilated. And because we believe this to be a symbol of human communication, blah, 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 so on and so forth, we judge by the pupil size changing that all babies are racist.
Yeah.
And they touted this for years. And I think that in some places, probably in normie Twitter, they are probably still regurgitating this stuff about how you have an implicit racial bias because of your genetic base as a white person or a black person and X, Y, and Z. And then it actually turned out that all of this stuff was complete nonsense. And that, you know, not only was the possibility that they might be measuring the change in the iris incorrectly or inconsistently, they may also be, you know, what if it's to do with the darkness or the brightness of the image? You never consider things like that. And and then I see someone else is going into the
p-hacking,
the chat, they're p-hacking, which is a whole other kettle of fish when you start to get into studies about, or studies that use regression methods and several regression formulas all meshed together. And especially because I discovered that with econometrics, that if you take a data set and another data set, and you know, there is no set regression that you have to run between these two because there's no solid sort of axiomatic principles about how you go about that, you can really just fudge the regression equation to make it spit out whatever trend you want.
You can make the numbers say what you want, basically, in a lot of cases.
And it's the same sense you were saying, the fact that there is not enough information sometimes in the paper itself to be able to accurately repeat the experiment, because they're not telling you how they do or do not go about controlling either certain variable factors or what things are sort of fixed elements that they are just completely ignoring. Yeah, people in the chat are asking, what's p-hacking? I will try and briefly explain it. In a sort of, it's more often something you would see in meta studies. So you're taking, you know, a whole subset of results and graphs and mathematical regressions from, say, 100 studies. And then you take all these statistics and you aggregate them all together into even more statistics, which are some of the ones we'll look at here.
It's also known as data dredging.
Yes, but you are essentially forcing a higher correlation score out of the data set than it would otherwise naturally give you.
Yes.
So say, for example, you wanted to show something like the Fisher effect in economics, which is an interrelation between interest rates and the loan market, or I might be wrong on that.
Nobody cares, Evelyn, go on.
Anyway, you know, you could say, for example, there was only a p-score of 0.85.
Yeah.
That you only had the strength of correlation of from 0 to 1 of 0.85.
The p represents correlation, by the way. That should be stated.
Oh, no, it's just at the start, but you could then figure about the numbers to bring the p-score up to like 0.87 or 0.88 to try and get in within a 95 or 90% confidence interval.
Well, we've got here that this is from the journal Nature, and this is from 2016, which is really when this broke in terms of mainstream attention. The problem with the replication crisis is there's the replication crisis, then there's the pop science reaction to the replication crisis, then there's the scientific establishment.
Whoa, 95% of science is fake, bro. Isn't that wacky? Whoa.
Yeah,
then on to the next thing.
Yeah, it kind of became, like, what happened was a lot of the backlash from what would be considered the scientific establishment, to use that term, was in relation to the pop science aspect of it.
Yeah.
And that they basically had a straw man built and then knocked the straw man down, rather than actually dealing with what is a pretty damning set of...
Ignore the fact that the vast majority of, say, HR studies that have dictated how workplaces should be organized for decades are fake. Laugh at the Boston Dynamics dog doing silly stuff.
Yes. To quote the journal Nature here, more than 70% of scientists have tried and failed to reproduce another scientist's experiments. More than half have failed to reproduce their own experiments. Those are some of the telling figures that emerge from Nature's survey of 1,570 researchers who took a brief online questionnaire on reproducibility in research. This is whilst the replication crisis has been ongoing for quite a while.
Well, this is also self-reporting.
Yes, this is self-reporting.
It could be worse.
apologies for the blurry image here, but this is what's left in the weird scraped version of their old article. Yeah. They probably changed formats several times. But basically, it's 52% said there was a significant crisis, 38% said there was a slight crisis. So 90% of researchers thought there was, at least in some way, a replication crisis. So this isn't something that's coming from reactionary circles, in quotes. It's something that's really coming from...
Well, see, even when you suggest that, though, you can't even really give them the credit that there would be a subset of 15% or 10%, quote-unquote, reactionary scientists, because we know these people don't exist.
No, they do not
especially exist. In the fields that they're looking at here, which is public health, social sciences, is your sort of umbrella of sociology and psychology and behavioural economics and all that kind of stuff. I mean, people might remember if they've watched... I can't remember which Adam Curtis documentary it is,
yeah,
but it's one of the ones that harks a lot on a lot of Daniel Kahneman's research. And then Adam Curtis kind of drops the ball in the 90s that even Daniel Kahneman himself kind of admitted the vast majority of his behavioural economics research he did in the 60s and 70s couldn't be repeated.
Well, this is from Nature. It's to do with cell biology here it talks about. Mm. This is from harder sciences than psychology and the social sciences. The social sciences, and especially psychology, got their asses handed to them by that. This, in fact, it's one of the things really that made the social sciences more of a laughingstock than it already was, because the social sciences as a subset is the place where not only reproducibility is low, but the means to reproduce is incredibly low. As in the means to actually figure out what the conditions of the study were.
The next paragraph I've got on the screen here.
Yeah.
A minority of respondents reported ever having tried to publish a replication study.
Yes.
So, first and foremost, there is already an admittance here that the vast majority of studies don't even, like, they don't even think about repeating them. Once you get a result done, that's science, that's the truth. Bing, bang, bosh. When work does not reproduce, researchers often assume there is a perfectly valid and probably boring reason.
Yeah, what's more, incentives to publish positive replications are low and journals can be reluctant to publish negative findings. Basically, as especially when you reach the orthodoxy stage. To read out some of my thoughts here, it's you just get lost in the weeds with this, but the bird's eye view is that with the advent of hundreds of research institutes, the specialist research industry, which is what some people blame for part of this crisis, is that the amount of, in quotes, science now outstrips the organic demand. There isn't, and especially outstrips the pace of meaningful discovery.
I think actually that, again, this is something that Spengler mentions in Man and Technics.
Yeah.
He suggests that the problem isn't so much the... In some sense, the problem isn't so much the obsession with technique, but our obsession with technique does not meet the supply of technically proficient operators required to constantly provide new discoveries at an ever-accelerating rate.
Yes.
That you essentially hit this kind of... There's a way they look at it, and actually in... behavioral economics studies, they have this effect of like the standing on giant shoulders effect, where you are always working from the infinite new set of questions from the previous research that have set out before you.
Yeah.
However, if all of that stuff's false and the questions they're putting forward aren't the correct ones, then actually what you're dealing with is a dearth of false science, and it creates this kind of inverse effect where, much like you're saying here, there is so much more demand to produce quote-unquote science where there is no new knowledge to be found.
No. It is just, a lot of it is just empty noise. And a lot of this is to do with the pressure to publish.
Mm.
A large part of being a researcher is publishing original research. It's in all fields. There is an obsession, especially in behavioral sciences or psychology, where the physical sciences, they have to verify things. A lot of particle physics is attempting replication because of various detectors, various parameters. They have to be sure that what they detected is real. But that's not the case in, well, most areas now. A neutral, let's say, explanation for part of the replicability crisis is the idea that you publish, if you get a positive result, negative results don't get published that often, as has been stated there. And journals do not like repeat business, as in they don't like a re repetition of the same subject in the same study. It's seen as boring. And again, that's partly to do with the popification of science, in that a lot of the journals now are meant for not just within the field consumption. A lot of people will read, say, the journal Nature because they want to be these informed, I fucking love science people. And to satiate the demands of the readership, they want to constantly be giving people what feel like meaningful discoveries rather than having 15 different iterations of the same experiment which show an unclear result, which is what science is really, which is what the scientific method generally produces. It's a lot of it is to do with the jazzing up of research in many ways. And then this also means that grants are awarded in that way. Grants are awarded generally
Well,
for
yeah.
meaningful
I was
publication.
gonna say you would never when to hark again back on Spengler, if it's the Faustian drive for scientific knowledge,
Yes.
it doesn't want to, and even says this, that it doesn't need a confirmed theory. As long as there is some sort of theory that is a suitable explanation, it doesn't have to be true. But if it suitably explains to us in a way that we will accept, whether it's climate change or these other things, where there is actual no real investigation of cause and effect going on,
No.
that we will just continually accept them and lump one on top of the other on top of the other on top of the other, because why would you ever want to go back and verify if, for some reason or another, you still think the old one works?
Well, as a lead in, the longer that something goes unchallenged, the more it becomes orthodoxy, and the harder it is to deny because one, you may be insulting a large amount of people's egos, and two, just pure inertia. And if a lot of research is built on this, the implications that it might be false to your field are quite great. They will probably cause negative repercussions to you and those around you
Yeah,
if
and
you.
there's a great point you've got on your next one here, which sort of relies on a similar kind of thing as well, is that when it comes to science for private industry,
Yes.
there's sunk cost.
There is.
And if you try and develop some kind of medicine or some kind of new treatment, and it costs £1 billion to do so, and the final results at the end of spending £1 billion is you go, actually, we don't know. Well, obviously, you're going to lose your job. So you're just going to tell them what works.
There's a whole thing here in that they talk about the replication crisis has actually been worst possibly in medicine because they talk about corrective measures here, and I think corrective measures is to do with the scale of the problem. In physics and engineering, you don't need to take corrective measures because if something doesn't physically work, you find out about it really quickly. Extremely, like reality is your very yeah.
So what you're saying is when you've actually got something tangible and material in front of you that you can measure by a standard that you know is 100% verifiable, that you actually produce repeatable knowledge of that instead of studying like squishy pink things that have emotions and can't be
Yes.
measured.
Christian donated €5 and brings up a good point that saying people think science really works like a video game research tech tree. Yeah, they do.
Not entirely.
That this.
I mean, that's kind of Spengler's point, is that you're constantly grabbing the next thing on a tech tree to get
Yeah.
past the everyone else, and that you just, all the other stuff gets rejected. Who needs to know how conventional explosives work anymore? We have nukes.
Well, there's another thing here, in that a biochemistry graduate in the United Kingdom who asked not to be named because there's a lot of again a lot of repercussions for your career if you highlight this stuff, says the efforts to reproduce work of her lab's projects doubles the time and materials used, in addition to the time taken to troubleshoot when some things invariably don't work. Although replication does boost confidence in results, she says the cost means that she performs checks only for innovative projects or unexpected results. So again, orthodoxy becomes self-reinforcing. If something is the settled science, it remains the settled science, no matter how faulty it is. And that's mostly
Well,
be.
that was the phrase of 2020. The
Yeah,
science
this is
is
settled,
settled.
yeah.
It's locked down. It's masks. It's all these things that at no point have people gone back and checked these studies. And when they do, and they go back and check some of the mask ones, which people spent sizable sums of money, lots of
Yes.
man-hours doing so, it turns out that actually they don't work and they don't help.
Well, again, I don't want to go through specific links for this because you get bogged down in research papers, but one of the worst areas, like I said, is biochem, and one of the least trustworthy areas in terms of pharmaceutical research is end-of-life cancer treatment. For obvious reasons, it's very, very hard to gauge effectiveness from a patient point of view, not only in clinical trials, but in everyday usage. If you have, say, an unscrupulous pharmaceutical company who comes out with a bunch of studies saying a wonder drug, it does something, but it's not miraculous. They can get away with it. And there's a huge amount of pharmaceutical companies that do this. They're
Well, there's
exploiting the end-of-life kind of cancer care system with things that patently don't work because there's no way to prove it.
Well, I was going to say, not even necessarily just that. A study like that operates under the assumption that all cancers are at least the same or similar enough to compare, and that
Yes.
all cancers affect all people, or at least one subset of cancer affects one subset of people in one sort of certain way. There are so many things that are hanging in the balance there, that how could you even begin to suggest that it's a useful sort of yardstick?
Well, one of the places this first emerged in popular science was in 2016. We have an Atlantic article here, which I hope is still showing up properly. You wonderful. But The Atlantic has psychology's replication crisis is running out of excuses. Another big project has found that only half of studies can be repeated. And this time, the usual explanations fall flat. Again, slightly puff PC. It's the problem with this is that we don't have the time to go through a lot of dry papers, which they do exist. I would encourage you, we'll post, obviously we post our links quite a lot. I'd encourage you to go through and find your own examples, and there'll be stuff in here that is harder research that we'll come to a bit later. The nature of that one there was pretty good, but this came to the fore as a psychology problem primarily. It wasn't. Eventually, it was psychology that highlighted the replication crisis originally, because psychology, for those of you who might be aware of how research works, has tried to rid itself of some of the ridicule that the social sciences get. Psychology considers itself, as close as it can be, a hard science, as it were. And university departments go to great lengths to keep a lot of the social science stuff out of their psychology departments because they want to retain credibility. So psychology was the area where this was first brought up as a widespread problem, mostly because they were finding that so many established studies that a huge amount of not only psychological research but government policy is based on were not correct. And this became a long-running thing. They kept coming up with excuses and embarrassing themselves, as I'll go into in a little bit, but well, this is true. The findings here were pretty conclusive in that 14 out of 28 cases were replicatable, whereas it's not been possible to replicate basically half of psychological orthodoxy, which is incredibly worrying. We'll get into the details of this later because we do actually have a very good paper on this that you found, Evelyn, via the Mises Institute. We seem to be very good at finding most things. But this is how it's been communicated to the public, in that it is a psychology crisis primarily, but it is ongoing.
Well,
It surfaced, it's like I said, it surfaced in 2016 and it surfaced again in 2018.
but see, part of the thing as well that they won't address with even, I mean, we could go through this article from the Atlantic and scour it all, but I would imagine that they will bring up all the issues with scientists doing sloppy work with data sets, or they're manipulating regressions, or they're not being transparent about their methodology. What if part of the problem is just that the psychology as a subject is just fundamentally flawed?
Yes. I think the reason that a lot of people would like to put the replication crisis cat back in the bag is that, I guess we'll come to later, it completely torpedoes certain fields. So if you factor in the replication crisis into the validity of entire branches of what is considered science, if you prioritize a replicatability as a if you basically say, if this result cannot be reproduced validly, X amount of times, this is not knowledge.
Yes.
Which it should, that should be the bar, but it's not. Well, mostly because of the economic realities of research.
Do you remember, this had been a good while ago now, when I was doing, I think I even sent this to you, this had been years ago.
Yeah,
now.
The facial feedback hypothesis, and stuff like that.
It was something from one of the things in behavioural economics, where they were talking about a version of the replication crisis within that sort of line of thinking. And they turned out that, you know, not only was replication a problem, but that there wasn't enough replications going on.
No.
So that not only was it that, you know, half of them couldn't be repeated, but another quarter of them could only be repeated 1 out of 12 times or 1 out of 15 times.
Well, there's the
which makes it almost seem like it's chance.
It is chance.
And it's one of those things as well that the other side of this coin is not just the haha, lol, the libs use studies that aren't real. It's also like when you see some sort of paper that says leftist psychological typology, you know, identified, or some sort of paper about genetic studies, and they might have conclusions in them that are or aren't valid. And they may be useful to read to, you know, bolster your own knowledge or your own investigation in some way. But please do not rely on, you know, some study that says something about the leftist psychotypology as your baseline and your principle. It's the last thing you should be looking at.
Romantic Innkeeper of Grand Sorn, hell of a name there, says, do these streams get archived somewhere specific? We do have a backup of an Odyssey, but I also manually archive every stream that we do.
Yes.
But they obviously go on as VODs on our YouTube channel, but they are backed up on our Odyssey page, which I will post. I think it's linked in the description, I'm not actually sure.
I see Thugbear Life in chat says, I just save them myself. Expect a cease and desist letter from our lawyers.
No, please, please. We need distributed backups. That's very useful. It's quite, one of those, one by one, researchers have tried to repeat the classic experiments behind these well-known psychological effects and fail, right? They just list up a whole bunch of famous psychological experiments above.
Mm.
And whenever psychologists undertake large projects, like many labs do, in which they replicate past experiments on mice, they typically succeed on average half of the time, which is suspicious. It's almost like you're flipping a coin.
Yeah.
It's almost like none of these effects actually exist. Or maybe very few of them do, and we have to do even more study to figure out which of those are. But a 50% rate, again, just seems like you're tossing a coin. Ironically enough, it seems that one of the most reliable findings in psychology is only half of psychological studies can be successfully repeated. The failure rate is especially galling, blah, 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 blah. Basically, psychology is a field in which you cannot replicate a lot of what is considered basic.
Well, if we go on to... we can quickly look at the article from the Mises.org.
Yes.
Where they're just talking about it, and they reference a podcast, which I might go and listen back to at some point in future. But they also reference a 2015 paper by a guy called Brian Nozick, who actually goes to the length of disaggregating different types of psychological studies in his paper.
Would you like to put that on screen?
Yeah, we can get that up just now.
Because this is called Estimating the Reproducibility of Psychological Science. It's a very good paper. Again, this will be in the notes when you want to check the notes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, I think, the clearest resource that we found so far.
Yes.
I
suppose we've got enough time where we could maybe read through this sort of first page of the introduction and rationale, and we can go to the data on the bottom. Reproducibility is a defining feature of science, but the extent to which it characterizes current research is unknown. Scientific claims should not gain credence because of the status or authority of the originator, but by the replicability of their supporting evidence. Even research of exemplary quality may have irreproducible empirical findings because of random or systematic error. There is concern about the rate and predictors of reproducibility, but limited evidence, potentially problematic practices include selective reporting, selective analysis, and insufficient specification of the conditions necessary or sufficient to obtain the result. Direct replication is the attempt to recreate the conditions believed sufficient for obtaining a...
There we go. Previously observed finding.
Previously observed finding, and is the means of establishing reproducibility of a finding with new data. We conduct a large-scale collaborative effort to obtain an initial estimate of the reproducibility of psychological science. We conducted replications of 100 experimental and correlational studies published in 3 psychology journals using high-power design and original materials when available. There is no single standard for evaluating replication success, which I find quite strange.
Yes.
Here we evaluated reproducibility using significance and p-values, which is what we were talking about earlier
on. Talking about p-hacking.
Effect sizes, subjective assessments of replication teams, and meta-analysis of effect sizes. And the mean effect size R of the replication effect, MR, standard deviation of that, was half the magnitude of the mean effect of the original effects, representing a substantial decline. 97% of original studies had significant results, 36% of replications had significant results, 47% of original effect size were in the 95% confidence interval of the replication effect size. 39% of effects were subjectively rated to have replicated the original result. So they're roughly saying it's actually 60% are
bunk,
or at least to some degree.
And of those, there is a large percentage where the effects were smaller.
Yeah, and if we... I mean, we could read through the conclusion, but they're basically just going to say the same thing we've been talking about. If we go to, is it page 5 or 6?
Well, here we go. This graph is quite significant here because it shows that basically they were able to find a small amount of extremely reproducible studies, but the vast majority of them show very either no correlation, extremely low correlation, or negative correlation compared to the results. So the replication is either not significant or it flat out contradicts.
That last paragraph there looks not bad. We'll read that before we move on. Reproducibility is not well understood because the incentives for individual scientists prioritize novelty over replication, just as we have said.
Yes.
Innovation is the engine of discovery and is vital for a productive, effective scientific enterprise. However, innovative ideas become old news fast. Journal reviewers and editors may dismiss a new test of a published idea as unoriginal. Wow, imagine that.
Yeah.
You come up with someone else's study and you say, look, I've proved that this isn't true, and you go, oh, that's unoriginal.
Yeah, your work is derivative.
The claim that we already know this belies the uncertainty of scientific evidence. Innovation points out paths that are possible, replication points out paths that are likely. Progress relies on both. Replication can increase certainty when findings are reproduced and promote innovation when they are not. This project provides accumulating evidence for many findings in psychological research and suggests there is still more work to do to verify whether we know what we think what we know. We know what we think what we know.
Well, I'd like to launch into my spiel here slightly, which is the settled science argument is not only anti-science in quotes, it's very much meant to have this effect. Like, we'll go into malice later. We have quite a bit of time left. But what I want to talk about is that most people, when they argue about the science, do it in a specific way and not a general way.
Yeah, someone in the chat there, how this isn't the default expectation is ridiculous. No, exactly. They open up this paper by saying, you know, it is the replicability of the study that shows it's true. And that's the whole thing with, you know, your more narrow and strict empiricism. And this is a lot of what Mises and Rothbard and Hoppe have to say about it, is it's not that your eyes are lying to you, or the fact that, you know, this ball fits through this hole is not a repeatable empirical sort of experiment. It is that empirically provable to the point where it seems like it's a given. And that's the point they're trying to make, is that it's almost kind of the validity of the study is imputed backwards by the fact that we don't have to question it because we know it to be certain.
Yeah.
And that's they're trying to do it all backwards by essentially banking on lots of other supposedly known certainties to stick another little certainty on top. And, you know, each one of these has never been tested, so we actually don't know that they're certain.
Well, to not put it in too much of a grandiose way, all of this adds up to a battle about what is human knowledge and the extent of human knowledge and what human knowledge is. Because if we extrapolate this to even more, let's woolly fields, the social sciences, for example, and you consider that psychology itself, which is quite self-recriminating in some ways, they have gone through a lot of self-refraction, as there's demonstrates the fact that they were able to nut up and admit to parts of the replication crisis shows that they're at least trying to do something about it, if not getting to grips with it fully.
Mm.
But other fields aren't. Yes. Other fields are fully off in the weeds.
I was going to say, if we go down to page 5 in this study,
yes,
where they've got loads of stuff in here about their methodology and their scores and this, that, and the next thing. But all we want to look at here in this graph is the percent right next to, so it's the second number in each list.
Oh, that's fine, actually.
Yeah. So overall percentage, they find percent original effect size, then replication confidence interval 95%. Yeah. Overall, 47%.
Yes.
And then they actually go on to ask the people doing the replication study how many of these are actually replicable, you know, in your opinion. And they estimate even lower, and they say 39% of overall. Well,
when you look at the actual breakdown, which you pointed out, is if you look here, GPSP social or PSYPO social, which are basically two different branches of social psychology,
mm.
the percentage there is far lower than the cognitive one.
Yes.
Which means that in terms of the way we consider how humans interact socially, it is much more uncertain, or is much maybe even inverted what we know than what we know about how they function cognitively.
Well, no, we are told time and time and again that IQ studies are pseudoscience, but what this seems to be indicating is that something akin to an IQ study or a raw cognitive performance study on, say, different illnesses, different ethnicities, different social groups, or well, not social groups, but socioeconomic groups that they then do a cognitive study with, it would indicate actually that they are more solid than the social science we are told to go off of that tries to disaggregate itself from the psychology that actually seems to be repeatable.
Well, there's a great comment in the chat, actually, from Manskeeping Group Grand Soramos. That's a long name. I actually do academic research for engineering. We look at a lot of Indian and Chinese math control, such as aerospace papers, and there is a large problem of reproducibility in these countries. Well, yeah, their IQs generally start with 80s, no matter what they say.
Mm.
And China and India fake a huge amount of research.
Well, that was the thing we were looking at the other day, which is a nice lead-in to... Oh, no, we've got one or two more before we get to the climate stuff.
Yes.
But it was the paper from National Geographic where they're like, yes, all this work about extreme weather has been done in third world universities, and these are universities that are getting funding from the climate reparations that these papers are trying to justify.
Yes.
So it's not fair for you to question the methodology due to historical injustices.
Yep, that's that's actually what happens. As you are spotting them in the places where they shouldn't be, but in the places where they are, but we know they are, is even like as bad as you know it is in terms of the physical sciences, in terms of like climate science from third world countries, it is far, far, far worse. And a lot of these emerging economies in terms of the what is becoming the progressive stack of research, what we're doing here and what we're talking about here is not political.
No.
And it's not malicious. Or at least we're assuming it's not malicious at this stage. This is what can happen in a purely, let's say, self-misleading system.
Let's buy into the myth of neutrality for a moment, and let's say that the empirical science is something that can be done and operated and engaged and evaluated without tarnishing it by your own personal standards or morals or values.
Yes,
is what you're trying to suggest. That let's not think about whether or not there's economic gain for writing these papers or a whole host of other things. Let's just suggest that it's all above board, and that these people just are—they're just making mistakes because of the nature of the sort of investigation they're engaging in.
Well, it's the fact that replicate, as the commenter talked about, replicatability is not the default, and we don't go through many iterations of what we consider foundational studies is absurd, and it really does pull into question what we consider the basis of scientific knowledge in many fields. You know, we're not going to sit here and say, oh, they never prove gravity.
Well, it's, you know, think of it as well when it comes to something even more tangible, you know, when they crash test a brand new vehicle.
Yeah.
Don't do like Volvo, don't just get one out, crash and go, right, they're all good.
Hmm.
the proof and the pudding is in the eating, and again, and again, and again, and again.
this ends with a quite impassioned plea here. It says, "We conducted this project because we care deeply about the health of our discipline and believe it is in its promise for accumulating knowledge about human behavior that can advance the quality of the human condition. Reproducibility is central to that aim. Accumulating evidence is the scientific community's method of self-correction and is the best available option for achieving that ultimate goal."
I mean, I think that...
Truth.
They used a word there I wasn't actually considering, but when they call it a discipline,
yeah,
that actually seems to me, you know, they are harking back to, again, this notion of almost ritual.
Yeah.
That the science becomes known and it becomes given because you repeat it and again and again and again, and you become hardened almost as the scientist to some extent by your ability to continue to do this in the same way over and over again without affecting it by your own sort of standards.
To bring a little bit of politics into it, research has become a lot less adversarial.
Mm.
It used to be, if you look at the 19th century, you'd have a whole bunch of gentlemen scientists basically verbally trying to beat the piss out of each other because they all believed that they should have the discovery.
Mm.
There was a lot of bad science before that in a short term, but over a medium term,
yeah,
that really weeds out the shit, really. If something stands test, it will stand test. And the you know, making, there's all this stuff about making science less male, making science less intimidating.
Well,
and
we
that's
all
partially
know that
what's led to this environment.
Having knowledge be verifiable is inherently patriarchal. So we're going to ask you to stop that. There was another one here. This was actually something I found. We can just sort of have this up as something there. It was in the Wikipedia page on replicability.
Yes.
And again, specifically in the terms of medicine, why most clinical research is not useful, by John P.A. Ioannidis, who is the Irish guy that people will know was one of the first big COVID skeptics.
Yes.
And maybe it's not interesting, it's just that maybe it's something we should have expected, is the fact that the same guy who's going on about how we don't know enough about COVID in March 2020 to start a lockdown is also the same kind of guy. It's like, well, the vast majority of clinical research is useless because it operates from the perspective of the surgeon or the doctor or the nurse. They're not actually engaging in proper raw data with patient outcomes, because there would be so much of it that they would have to find a whole new method of sifting through it.
Yes. Well, there's a general theme that we found in a lot of the people who were involved, some of the earlier alarm ringing for the replication crisis, have also essentially been drummed out of their fields, especially when they came into contact with some of the, like, the lockdowns were a big filter. If you have some degree of critical thinking skill and honesty, you will be drummed out by the establishment. And the other side of the replication crisis is kind of the deliberate stuff.
It's just these sort of bullet points he's got here. The second and the third one. Many of the features that make clinical research useful can be identified, including those relating to problem base, context placement, information game, pragmatism, patient-centeredness, value for money, feasibility and transparency. Many studies, even in the major general medical journals, do not satisfy these features, and very few studies satisfy most or all of them. Most clinical research, therefore, fails to be useful not because of its findings, but because of its design.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like doing a bunch of aerodynamics studies and not correcting for humidity.
Well, it's the fact that this has become the norm.
Mm.
A lot of biomed companies, a lot of universities, and especially when it comes to the public money grant system, the obsession in Western countries of funding research and science councils has really contributed to this. In that there is, like I said, there is not an organic demand for most of this stuff. Most of this is fictional busy work from governments, or fictional busy work from industries that have grown up around research for the sake of research, which a lot of people will laud, especially, like I said, the I fucking love science people. That is not positive, and it leads to these kind of results. But we wanted to just raise that interesting with the John P. A. Lander stuff. I can never quite say that. You say his last name.
It's Ioannidis.
Ioannidis,
okay. It's Irish.
I am reading that as an L. But there's another one here from PubMed Central. It's assessing the data availability and research reproducibility in hydrology and water resources. I want to use this as the lead-in for when we talk about the climate change stuff, because hydrology and water resource management is a relatively new field. It's one of these new green fields, one of these new sustainability sciences. And what they found was, in kind of a meta-study of nearly 2,000 articles published by 6 hydrology and water research journals in 2017, 0.6 to 6.8 might be reproduced.
Well, that means at most, or well, 95% confidence that the results might be reduced. All right, no, I see they've got the confidence interval and the estimates.
Yes, they do.
So at most, like less than 200 of these studies of an entire field can even begin to be replicated.
All our aspects for the results not reproducible. So basically 5% of those as well, or 5% of the studies were basically the artifacts were available, but the methodology wasn't good enough to be reproducible.
Mm.
And that's a big problem in a lot of environmental science studies.
Well, that's to further back on the replication crisis Wikipedia article, there's a direct snippet from Daniel Kahneman where he goes on to suggest that part of the problem is that people aren't actually transparent enough about what their method is.
But
they don't explain in the paper to the detailed requirement how they actually got their results. There is no, you know, A, B to step Z. They just go A to Z and here's the results.
Here's the thing, in that 89% had no directions on how to how to reproduce the study, which is amazing. 7%, though. 7% replicability is insane. I mean, we're talking about 50% being a crisis in psychology. But when you get into these new sustainability sciences, it becomes exponentially worse. They become...
It's not even a field. Yeah, it's not even that they're dealing with something that is a result of kind of maybe even affected by random chance to such a great degree. They actually might just have cause and effect entirely backwards.
Yes.
And they're literally trying to repeat a study that is not true. It's not unrepeatable because the data is played with or because the method they're not transparent about. It's because the method of investigation and the thing they're investigating is not true or just not real.
Well, do you want to quickly read the one here from the Wikipedia article?
Yeah, that was a summation of it, really. There wasn't too much to it.
Okay, you were talking about the involving authors thing.
Yeah. But he's talking about... Others, such as psychologist Andrew Wilson, disagree, arguing that the original author should write down the methods in detail. An investigation of replication rates in psychology in 2012 indicated higher success rates of replication in replication studies where there was author overlap with original authors of the study. 91.7% successful replication rates in studies with author overlap compared to 64.6% successful replication rates without author overlap.
The problem there becomes study leading and personnel.
Well, yes, that was kind of the thing about it, because I considered that, you know, you've got one here, the Andrew Wilson guy is demanding that they be more transparent. Well, Kahneman is sort of suggesting, well, why don't you have them sort of caretake the replication process, which is a bit kind of like, yeah, I'm sure you'd rather they just, they were involved in manipulating that part of it too.
Well, where I would like to talk about, there's other... The evolutionary psychology stuff, the kind of human intelligence, Edward Dutton stuff, I want to leave for another stream.
Mm.
Because that is a completely different... That we can talk about the purely malicious stuff in that sense.
Yeah.
I think that is a bit too big for what we're doing today. But the area I want to talk about where the replicatability crisis has been... Or reproducibility crisis has been kind of stuffed back into the bag hardest has been in the climate science arena. Because there have been several instances in which, you know, they've tried to Nothingburg certain two events that were called Climategate, in which
are we about to turn the hockey stick upside down?
Yeah, we're about to turn the hockey stick. The people talk about the hockey stick. People also talk about the fact that they were deliberately fudging their results because they were pressured to as an agenda. Like, that has been the case in climate science twice.
You mean there's an agenda behind the neutral science?
Well, that's what I wanted to put in the notes here, in that let's see what happens when political facts are injected into an already disastrous formula, which is that we so far have talked about stuff we could generously say as what could be accidental lack of reproduction.
Emergent mistakes.
Yeah, emergent mistakes. It's a problem of methodology. It's not a problem of malicious fakery.
Mm.
But when you start to get into the politicization of science, replicatability studies become even harder to do.
It no longer becomes an inconvenient sort of obstacle on the quest for greater knowledge. It now becomes the wiggle room through which you can push your scams through.
This is from 2018, from a publication called Pacific Standard. I'm not quite sure who they are, but they had one of the best articles I saw here. What a reproducibility crisis committee found when it looked at climate science. The scientific community is working to make its predictions more accurate, but there's still a long way to go. As the debate in Washington heats above a climate change and transparency in science, the National Academies of Science, Engineering and Medicine held a quiet meeting last week to discuss just how consistent the results are across climate studies. The verdict for those who follow the science wasn't too surprising. There's broad agreement among climate studies that global warming is happening and human-driven. But as scientists work to zero in an exact forecast, basically this is them doing cover for them, this article here. What they are doing is talking about the fact that all of the scandals that have happened, all the stuff that's come out, isn't real. And of course we know, although nothing in ClimateGate email suggests the basic conclusions of mainstream climate science are wrong, they provide fodder for skeptical politicians and likely like the public's trust in climate. Basically what they're saying is that, yes, climate change science is basically bunk, but it can't be for political reasons. Phrasing here is just amazing.
I would always, again, I mentioned them earlier on, I would always send people over to, they should still be in YouTube talks by Willie Soon, because there's some of those where he takes large amounts of Jim Hansen's and David Goddard's research that they did as part of, they did in partnership with NASA in the early 2000s. Like, you know, the stuff that Al Gore was bringing up as statistics during his, like, bloody presidential run and all that kind of nonsense were done by these people, and he destroys it all by just pointing out like very basics of methodological flaws and the fact that there is so much data that they had omitted and then just never fully filled in all the omitted data, which would have actually shown the exact opposite of the results they demonstrated in their studies.
Well, I wanted to highlight this one just because of the tone of all of this. The tone is that falsification of research, essentially, isn't bad because it's bad science. It's bad because it might let the climate skeptics have a victory.
Yeah, what's that last paragraph there? What's the silver lining?
Yeah.
At last week's meeting, Andrea Dutton, a scientist at the University of Florida who studies Earth's past climates, noted a silver lining to the hostile attention the field has received from folks to deny the reality of human-driven climate change.
The reality of human-driven, settled science.
Yes. The public scrutiny has, I think, helped us to up our game in all these areas and be better about being transparent.
Basically, they got caught. that's all that one's about. But this is one from just a blog called What's Up With That, which I think is more
What's
of a...
What's Up With That?
It's more of a climate skeptic blog, I believe.
Oh no, we've got the porn bots in the chat.
Oh no, the liberals are at it again. I will
just ban it, hide the user. Yeah, I'll start here. The summary. After a decade of slow growth beneath public view, the replication crisis in science begins breaking into public view. First psychology and biomedical studies, and they're spreading to many other fields, overturning what we are told is settled science, the foundations of our personal behaviour and public policy. Here's an introduction to the conflict. There's pushback with the usual links to the detailed information at the end. He's got a quote from Goethe there, of all things. That's a good start. Men only care for science so far as they get a living by it, and that they worship even error when it affords them a subsistence.
That's a great one. I'm going to zoom out again. Basically, they're talking about the fact that Paul Flatter calls the path month about the crisis. He's talking about sugar conspiracy, how scientists fell in line out of love. Oxycontin, the idea of low fat and yes. then filling things with sugar.
Yeah.
Cancer research is broken. Big science is broken. It's kind of like a Dunning-Kruger thing they're doing here, where they're going through the fact that all of these fields have had massive scandals, and yet, despite things like climate gain, the whole climate science stuff is being shielded from it, despite being possibly the most politicized area of the scientific community now outside of, I guess, biomed, because biomed has suddenly jumped the order with all the lockdowns. Amazing, isn't it, that the more settled the science, the more controversial the field. Funny, that one.
It's a very Schmittian sort of language game, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And this is approaching it from a different angle. It's kind of doing what we're doing here, but this is one of the only decent resources I could find which even acknowledged replicatability, right? That wasn't just trying to do cover for it.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just like, this exists, this is affecting climate science, but all of it's true. And has extreme orthodox language to it, which again is a massive red flag when you start seeing it. Once you start seeing orthodox language rather than scientific language, you should start disbelieving what you're seeing. Again, there's not a lot in here. He's basically saying that there needs to be more research.
Let's just see the conclusion section here. This just touches on many dimensions of the replication crisis. For example, there is large and growing literature about the misuse of statistics and the first steps to understanding the various causes of replication failure, almost certainly from structural issues perhaps common to many or all sciences today. We can only guess at how many of the scientists have serious problems with replication and the methodological problems that produce it. This may be one of the greatest challenges to science since the backlash to Darwin's theory of evolution. Depending on the extent of the problem, the resistance of institutions to reform this might become the world's largest challenge since the Roman Catholic Church's assault in 15th and 16th centuries put in the works of famous scientists Index Librorum Prohibitum Biblia. I did a slightly gay pause stuff about most science there, but the point is very well understood. However, I will say, much as Spengler suggests, the hand itself is useless without a weapon to wield it, so the thought that it might have gradually evolved becomes a very sort of silly idea.
Yeah, it does touch on the frequent disregards for the methodological safeguards other scientists rely upon, which is really, I don't have time to go into just the absolute insanity of climate science, but there is so much in there that throws out the normal methodological kind of controls that other science areas have. And that the replication crisis hasn't reared its head as much as it could have done because it is politically sheltered. And that is, again, the biomed stuff happened in the past.
Well, there is also a problem here that the man on the street is not going to understand what's going on here.
No.
And other than basically saying to them, the vast majority of science is bunk, they can't, the nuances of what's going on here is completely lost on them. Yes. I mean, if anyone in chat has sort of lost as to more specific problems with empiricism, some of which I believe we covered in the democratization series.
We did, yes.
Bits and pieces. But Mises and Hopper, I think if you read Hopper's A Praxeology in Economic Science or The Economic Method or something like that, I believe there is a large treatment in there of the problems with empiricism in regards to economic science.
Yes. I've just put this tweet back on screen just because this reminds us of really just where we started here, which is this idea of this is the outcome of this, really. This is the outcome of the settled science mindset. And I think there's worth a discussion here of why are we here? Why did the replication crisis happen? And is it purely emergent phenomena? Or do you believe, as I do, that a huge amount of the way that scientific research is undertaken has been deliberately steered into an area where it cannot be challenged or reproduced?
I've noticed as well that at Crush the Racists, Chief Resistance down there has obviously called out Eric Sorensen for
stealing from a brown man. Yeah.
Well, he's engaged in a crisis of replication.
Yes.
It's all come full circle.
It has all come full circle. That's quite funny. But I think, it's an important distinction to make because people need to not only rip themselves from believing the established narrative, they need to realize that a lot of what is considered knowledge, mm-hmm. post 1950 especially, is very dubious.
Yes.
Unless you're in a hard science setting, unless we're talking about what are proven methodologies that have real world applications, physical sciences, certain long-standing practices of medicine, even though they might not be safe in some ways. Physics is relatively safe. Traditional chemistry rather than biochemistry is relatively safe. Engineering is relatively safe because you have to produce physical results. Mm. They are not something that is subjective to human experience.
Someone in chat there has got it bang on. If you disagree with the priests about the Bible, it's not really a disagreement. You're actually just incorrect. You're not just incorrect, but you're also a sinner.
But the
you're a heretic.
The roundabout thing about the replication crisis is it is an intellectualizing exercise for people who simply feel uncomfortable about empiricism, let's say. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like the way that knowledge is aggregated, produced, talked about, becomes orthodoxy, and is believed in a pseudo-religious sense.
Yeah.
But they don't have the tools to attack it at its base. And I would say that, attack it at the highest level you can, which is, again, almost at a spiritual level, which is that if you are announcing something as heresy, it is simply belief. And that's how you shouldn't go after, and I said going after individual studies when it comes to COVID.
I remember there being quite a good thing by Pete Q, and I can't remember who he had on his stream at one point, but they were talking about the Constitution sort of backhandedly, and the first statement is we take these truths to be self-evident.
Yes.
It's a metaphysical relationship that people have with scientific data. They just don't realise it. And it's the same with, politics. The vast majority of people do not understand and will never understand the contents of the studies they're using on Twitter.
No.
But what they're doing is they are posting them like bits of scripture to justify their faith.
I actually would like to close the stream, one, by shilling our Substack. Because our Substack is very good and you should view it. But I'll link this piece here because I'm reading from one of my old pieces called The Technocrats, which has only become more relevant as time has gone on. But I think the first paragraph of this, I also quite enjoy my Simpsons font there. First paragraph of this really elucidates what we're trying to talk about. The modern technological state is a bafflingly complex entity to the average individual within it. They do not, and feel they cannot, know or understand the function of each part of bureaucracy around them, even as it affects their everyday lives. The overload of information, rules, and regulations, and the sheer size and number of institutions, force individuals to concede within themselves that these institutions are necessary. Surely in some way they are needed for the continued peace and prosperity, even if they don't understand how. There must be some unseen, knowledgeable class of people who keep it all running, and prevent the abject chaos promised should these institutions collapse. In the same way, agents of opaque organizations such as MI5 or the CIA are posited to the thin blue line between you and the violent tendencies of your fellow man, the managerial class are posited as the thin paper line between you and a world without order. They are the technocrats. And within a technocratic system, the scientists, as I kind of go into here, are the priestly class. They are the people who administer the sacrament. But the sacrament, as we can show here, is tainted. They cannot prove what they are saying, and they have no interest in proving what they are saying.
I just like the comment there by Living the Dream. Michael Fish was just learning about storms. Peak UK deep lore. Real, 80s Brit bong hours.
Yes. But I would encourage you to go over and read some of our Substack stuff, because I also some of the stuff in the latest piece, The Holy Mountain, is touched on when it comes to the pseudo religiosity of what some people refer to as a cathedral. I actually still quite like that framing, despite some people not enjoying the neutrality that some people start to imply about it. But
part of the thing for me with cathedral is that it's not. A cathedral in my mind is not something mechanical, cold, and as heartless as I think our system nowadays actually is. But anyway, that's a conversation for a different day.
That is. I think we've covered everything here. I will go through our normal shilling again. Do click on the links down below. You can find us on Telegram. The Nomos website is back up, and we will have updates there at some point. I have a Discord still, but it's kind of a legacy Discord where people hang out. Go subscribe to Substack, because I just displayed there. We will continue, I think, streaming on Monday as a priority day, just because it seems to be the easiest. We seem to be busier during the week, although yes. I'm trying to get together a stream with Trig next week. I spoke to him, and maybe doing something a bit less political, more kind of about some of the general degradation of UK media. It's just a bit of an excuse to talk about Red Dwarf and things like that, really. But we're going to do a bit of a lighter stream kind of about British culture and British media and some of its kind of alteration and mutation over the years to the point where we've found it now in kind of a pretty much a dead spot. The UK has really stopped producing stuff that's being replicated around the world like it used to. And I'd like to have a kind of a little bit of an examination of why that is, as well as some rank media nostalgia. So that might be coming at some point. We'll have to figure out what day that will be. But again, thank you guys for watching. Thanks to everyone who donated. Please interact, please, we beg. that's everything, really. I will say good night from me.
Good evening from me.
Good night. There we go.